We'll call this meeting to order. It's 1:40. Today is Thursday, February 10th. Members present are Representative Newman, Costello, Edgman, Dugan, Representative Guttenberg, Wilson, Guerra, Vice Chair Faircloth, Co-Chair Stoltz, and Co-Chair Thomas here. And Representative Jewell is excused. Today's presentation is the transferable tax credit presentation by Lenny Deeds. He's a master tax auditor with the Department of Revenue. And this time, we're being up here and start for the second time today, right? I believe it is. You should know how it's done then. So welcome to your House Finance.
Thank you.
Mr. Chair.
Yes, oh, excuse me. Representative Guerra.
Thank you. I just I rarely get visited in committee by constituents, and one of my favorite constituents from back home is here, Jerry Cole, sitting in the back row, and I just wanted to welcome Jerry. She's my constituent when she's feeling good, and she's Representative Guttenberg's constituent at times, but she often flees the Healy District to come down and across the street from me. So welcome to Jerry.
Okay. With that, we'll move it right along.
Representative Thomas, members of the committee, my name is Bruce Tangeman. I'm Deputy Commissioner for the Department of Revenue. I'd like to thank you all for the opportunity to come before you and do a walkthrough, kind of a 101 level on tax credits. Tax credits really came into being around 2006, and they've been changing quite a bit over the years, so it is a pretty complex system. And Lenny is our audit master in the Department of Revenue, who is the expert in tax credits for us. So I'll turn the presentation over to him.
Also note that the Senate Finance went through this in 2 hours?
Hour and a half.
Okay, that's a challenge, Finance. Thank you, Lenny.
Thank you. Like Deputy Commissioner Pendleman said, my name is Lenny Deese, and I'm Audit Master with the Department of Revenue. And I'm here today to give a presentation on tax credits with the intent of describing the different types of credits we have available under the production tax statutes. Also talk about a little bit about how the credits have been used since they came into being, and to give you some information on what impact this had to the state in terms of budget impacts.
Also, Lenny, we usually try to go through one screen at a time and then have questions, just in case.
Okay.
Thank you.
Okay, the first slide. It's just given a kind of a listing of all the different types of credits that are available under the production tax statutes. We have what's referred to as capital expenditure credit, an alternative credit for oil and gas exploration, a net operating loss carry forward credit, transitional investment expenditure credit, some additional non-transferable tax credits, well lease expenditures credit, and the Cook Inlet jackup rig credit.
Representative Guttenberg.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. It's good to be back. Hopefully I will be. A question on some of these, the credits, certainly looking at the capital credits. Are these, we're giving credits, are there industry standards of these, or does Alaska make up its own game plan as we've gone along? I mean, I heard you were earlier today, briefly in Senate Finance, when you talked about your background, you worked in the industry and other places. So, just trying to figure out if our credits and the things we give capital expenditure credits is if we made up our own game plan as we've gone along.
Representative Guttenberg, through the chair, no, we're using the same standards that are for capital expenditures that are required under the Internal Revenue Code.
Thank you.
Representative Guerra.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Just for some of the folks who are watching, many of us went through a bit of this with these gentlemen yesterday. Can you just help me on the ones on page 3, the credits, just the ones that apply to the North Slope? For two sample fields, let's say Prudhoe Bay and let's say a field that qualifies for the alternative tax credit 20 miles away from a delineated unit and 3 miles away from a well. So those two examples, one that's 20 miles away and one that's Prudhoe Bay. For Prudhoe Bay, which of these can you add together?
Representative Garrett, through the chair. For Prudhoe Bay, a currently developing oil field, the credits that would be most applicable there would be a capital expenditure credit. If the situation were so for one of the working interest owners at Prudhoe Bay, a net operating loss credit would be applicable. A transitional investment credit would not be applicable because of the fact that Prudhoe Bay was producing prior to January 1st, 2008. Additional non-transferable tax credits is a possibility. It depends on the facts of the particular taxpayer's case there. Well lease expenditures credit, that credit was one of the new ones that was created last year in legislation, and it's only applicable to areas outside of Prudhoe Bay. And the Cook Inlet Jackup Rig credit is, well, as the name implies, is obviously only applicable to Cook Inlet. The alternative credits for oil and gas exploration would be a credit that's available to, as you described, a new, say, discovery that's outside of a unit, more than 25 miles from a unit, and 3 miles from an existing well. A net operating loss credit could also could come into play in that situation. And on the North Slope, the additional non-transferable tax credit may come into play if there's some production there of less than 50,000 barrels per day. So,
and through the chair, what I was trying to get, and I don't think you can give it to me, is if you add all these credits up in terms of a percentage of what the state pays for capital costs,
yeah,
some of these are percentages, but some of them are dollars, right? So.
Yes, some are percentages and some are dollars. The capital expenditure credit is a 20% credit, 20% of capital dollars spent. The alternative tax credit for oil and gas exploration is either a 30 or 40% credit, depends on the situations involved in the projects. The net operating loss credit is a 25% credit. The transitional investment expenditure credit is a credit based on the percentage of capital spend. It's a 20% credit based on capital spend that were incurred prior to PPT coming into effect. The additional non-transferable tax credit is one that's strictly based on dollars. You have either a $6 million credit if you're a company that's exploring in an area that's not Prudhoe Bay or Cook Inlet. And you also have what's referred to as a small producer credit, which is a $12 million credit for companies producing less than 50,000 barrels of oil per day. And that credit is prorated between 50,000 barrels a day to 100,000 barrels a day from 12 million down to zero. The well lease expenditures credit is a credit based on percentage of certain types of well lease expenditures. It's a 40% credit, and like I mentioned before, right now it's only applicable for areas south of 68 degrees north latitude, which is for what we consider to be the start of the North Slope. And the Cook Inlet Jackup Rig credit is a credit based on a percentage of the first $25 million of expenditures for the first three companies or taxpayers using a jackup rig in the Cook Inlet area. The first well that's drilled, that company could be eligible for a credit of up to 100% of the first $25 million of qualified exploration expenditures. For the second taxpayer or explorer that drills a well using that same jackup rig, they could get up to they could get 90% of up to $25 million. So that credit would be worth at the most $22.5 million. And the third taxpayer or explorer using the Cook and the jackup rig could get up to 80% of the first $25 million of expenditures.
Last follow-up on this, Mr. Chair?
Last follow-up.
just for the North Slope. So if you're a new producer and you're producing within 3 miles of an existing well, you get the 20% capital expenditure credit, and if you lose money, you get a 25% carry forward loss credit. So
you could, yes, this certainly is, you could.
And you just add those two, that's 45%?
Yes, you could.
And then if you're in a field that's more than 3 miles away from a well and more than 20 miles away from a delineated unit, you can get the 40% alternative tax credit, and if you haven't yet started to make money, you can add the 25%?
Yes.
Okay, so 65% or 55%. All right, thanks.
The next slide talks a little bit about the timeline for when he's when the credits came into existence, and kind of give you a feel for what's happened since then. Going from the top to the bottom, the first timeline is related to the section 4355023A and B. Those credits came into existence with PPT in April 1st, 2006. They originally started out as the 023A credit was a 20% credit of qualified capital expenditures. The 023B credit was a 20% credit of net operating loss carry forward. And a net operating loss is defined as when the lease expenditures, a taxpayer's lease expenditures exceeds their revenues. So instead of having a positive amount there, if they have a negative amount, they can convert that to a tax credit. Those credits went through some changes in ACES. The change for the 023A credit was, instead of the taxpayer or producer being able to take those credits in full in the year earned, ACES changed the statute so that only 50% of that credit could be taken against the tax liability in the year it was earned. And under the 023B credit, the amount of the credit rate went from 20% to 25%. The next credit on the list, the well lease expenditure credit, came into being in up to last year's session, effective July 1st, 2010, for intangible drilling costs and seismic activity within an existing unit. Taxpayer could get 40% for those type of expenditures, only in Cook Inlet at this time, or only in areas south of the North Slope. The transitional investment credits came into being at the beginning of, with the inception of PPT. And ACES in July of, effective July 1 of 2008, actually effective January 1st of 2008, the credit is only available to those companies or producers who had no production prior to January 1, 2008. So some companies were able to take the transitional investment credit for that year and 9 month period between April 1st, 2006, and then they went away. The new, under section 4355024, there's two credits. One we call the New Area Development Credit, the $6 million credit, came into existence with the inception of ACES. In addition, the small producer credit, the $12 million credit that I mentioned earlier, came into existence at the inception of ACES. I mean, at the inception of PPT, excuse me, in April 1st, 2006. There was one credit that was actually already in existence prior to PPT coming taking effect, and that was the alternative credit for oil and gas exploration. First came into existence in 2003. Initially, it was a 20% and 40% credit. In ACES, however, changed it so that effective July 1st, 2008, for activities after that date, an explorer could get either 30% or 40%. And the percentages were based on the projects that they were doing meeting certain criteria. And lastly, the Cook Inlet jackup rig credit was enacted last year and effective July 1st, 2010.
Mr. Chairman, Mr. Dees, 4355OG4A, the new area development credit, you said that began with ACES. Is that, in fact, PPT? I just to clarify, both of those, A and C, were PPT. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
So now I'm going to give you a little bit more detailed information about each of the various types of credit. The first credit is under section 4355-023-A1, which is the 20% credit for qualified capital expenditures as defined in 4355-023. Typically, those type of expenditures include drilling, construction of facilities, new equipment, or any expenditures that qualify as capital under the Internal Revenue Code, Section 26. These expenditures may also qualify for a, or may help to lead to a net operating loss carry forward. So in essence, if company incurs capital expenditures and operating expenditures during the year, and those expenditures exceed the revenues that that company got for the year, then a particular capital dollar could get a 45% in credit, like we were talking about before, the 20% for the QCE credit, and then 25% for the net, as part of the net operating loss carry forward credit. The expenditures in this category of capital, though, are not the type that would qualify for the exploration credit. In other words, these capital expenditures do not include the drilling of exploration wells or seismic, doing seismic work or G&G. Expenditures. The credits must be spread over a two-year period, with the exception of ACES. As I mentioned before, prior when they were first originated under PPT, they could be used in the year that they were earned, but effective July 1st, 2007, these credits could only be used 50% in the year that was earned. However, last year, and one of the legislations changed so that for expenditures incurred south of 68 degrees north latitude, reverted back to being able to be used 100% in the year that they were earned. And that's only in Cook Inlet and the area of the state that's considered the new development area. These credits may be converted to transferable cash certificates, credit certificates, which may be sold to the state for cash, or they may be transferred to other taxpayers. And of course, these credits can be applied against tax liability if there is one. next I'm going to talk about expiration credits. And there are two main types of expiration credit activity. There are some expiration credits that fall within AS 4355023 Section A2. And the most, predominant expiration credits fall within Section 025 of the statutes, the 30 and 40% credits. In Section 4355023A2, a company that's qualifying for this type of credit can get 25% of the expenditures related to geologic and geophysical exploration or in connection with an exploration well. These credits, again, must be spread over the 2 years, and they may also qualify for NOL as part of the NOL carry forward loss calculation. These credits can be turned into transferable cash credit certificates, and they can be either sold back to the state or transferred to other taxpayers. One way to look at this type of credit, however, is that when you think of exploration activities, if the exploration activities do not fall outside of the 25-mile or the 3-mile requirements under 025, the exploration activity is only eligible for this 20% credit. Next, we have the alternative tax credit for oil and gas exploration under 4355025. This credit, again, is currently a 30 to 40% of qualified expenditures depending on well locations and proximities to existing wells and unit boundaries. These expenditures include certain expenditures associated with the drilling of an exploration well or with seismic and geophysical exploration work. These same expenditures may be included in the expenditures that would determine a net operating loss carry forward. So in essence, you could get a 40 plus 25, or 50. So this credit could be worth either 55 or 65% to an explorer. These same expenditures do not qualify for the capital expenditure credit in Section A1 of 4355023. To receive this credit, the taxpayer must provide certain well data to the Department of Natural Resources. This credit expires in 2016. May be converted to a transferable tax credit certificate and may be sold to state or transferred to other taxpayers.
Representative Guerra.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So the difference between the 20% credit and then the 30 and 40% is, do you want to give me more, or can you sort of start heading out into an area that's sort of uncharted, right?
And, yes.
But there are so many existing wells all over the North Slope. A ton of map area where you're 20 miles away from an existing unit. Has this been used very much, the 30 and 40% alternative credit?
It has.
Can you give us examples of where? Just a couple of examples.
Well, there have been a lot of areas on the North Slope where we've had 025 credits. Off the top of my head, I can't think of the name of some of the areas, but we've...
So it's being used, and has it been used in a place where people have then struck oil and started development, or not yet?
I can jump in. We don't really have any maps or geographical locations in this presentation. We can certainly get that information for you. Later on in the presentation, we go through the different types of credits and how much has been actually used, how much it has been used. So I think we can get you some dollar amounts, et cetera, later on in this presentation. And then as far as maps go, we can work on that for you.
Representative Dugan.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Deason, I understand that these are so-called stackable credits. Can you give me just a brief explanation of why they're stackable?
Representative Dugan, through the chair, I'm assuming you mean stackable, meaning that they could be the same expenditure could be used right. for different types. Well, the reason is the statutes allow that for.
Excuse me while I wipe this egg off my face.
No, I mean, that's really the only answer to that question is because they're not, we don't have a situation. There are some situations where certain expenditures can't be used, like in another category, but it would have to be specifically excluded by statute. For instance, I'm going to get to this later, but in the statute that created the Cook Inlet jackup rig, the statute explicitly say that any credits that are obtained under that section cannot be used in 023. But if it doesn't really prohibit it, then they can be used.
And as a follow-up through the chair, Representative Dugan, if you look back on the Gantt chart in 4, you can tell that they did come into play at different times, different years and different times throughout the year. So I think it was for more to create more incentive for investment.
Representative Gutenberg, Fred Clusher, then Costello.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. The third line from the bottom when you're talking about coordinating with DNR, how well does that coordination happen? I mean, do they send you a copy that they received, that they sent it to DNR, and DNR received a credit, or do you wait for DNR to say that it is the data that they're supposed to have submitted, or do you wait until there's an audit?
Representative Gutenberg, through the chair. In this particular credit, we actually perform an audit before we actually issue the credit. And as part of that process, when we get the application for this an 025 credit, we have a process within this DNR and DOR to share that information with each other. And so it's an active part of the process to make sure that DNR is getting the information that they need.
Thank you.
Representative Fairclough from the Costello.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Back to Representative Dugan's inquiry, just to probe just a little bit deeper. In your experience in the industry, is it typical that credits are stacked in both the U.S. market and in the global economy of oil and gas transactions?
Representative Farrakhan, through the chair, in my experience, I think Alaska has been the only production tax statute that I've seen where, you know, credits are handled this way.
So we think that we offer an incentive that other.
Oh, I can't really say that. I'm just saying that. I'm not saying that. In my experience.
Then just one other point. You have expires on 2016. This particular incentive was to inspire exploration, and so it has to be used for development past the 2008 cycle. Is that correct? you had to explore after June 30th, 2008 to be able to apply for that credit.
Yes, Representative Farrakhan, to the chair. To get the 30 to 40% credit, yes, it's for activity beyond July 1st, 2008. If people are applying for activity that was incurred prior to July 1st, 2008, then they would fall under the old statute, which was the 20 to 40%.
The PPP.
20%. Yes.
So, Mr. Chairman, just to draw a conclusion from our past actions, if we're creating a window between June 30th, 2008 and 2016, we're trying to incentivize a pipeline that's in decline to actually have oil come into that pipeline. That's a statement of my interpretation of why that particular law was passed.
Representative Costello.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Deese, do any of these tax credits apply specifically to non-unitized fields, or just are they just based on distance from other exploratory wells?
Representative Costello, through the chair. These tax credits apply to, in some cases, non-unitized. It applies to leases and properties within the state. And in some cases, we're only dealing with a lease, and in some cases, we're dealing with units. So I would say, for the most part, these particular tax credits, by virtue of the qualifications that they be outside the boundary of a unit by a certain distance, would tend to imply that they're only for activity that's not part of the unit.
Follow up. And Mr. Deese, in terms, I'm aware that companies are cashing in their tax credits. Do many of them transfer? I mean, how often do we see companies transferring their tax credits?
Representative Costello, through the chair. We have seen some, and I assume when you say transfer to other companies.
Yes.
Yes, we've seen some of that activities over the years. Now, in the more recent years, that activity has waned a little, where some companies actually stopped purchasing tax credits. And I think that was probably the major push for one of the changes that was made in last year's law that got rid of the 24-month reinvestment requirement, which I will talk about later, but we have seen some.
Is that in relation to your comment earlier about that the state could buy them back dollar for dollar versus a company they may not even find another company that would offer that, and it might come in lower at 70 cents on the dollar or lower? Is that the reason that we're seeing the waning of that?
Representative Costello, through the chair. I made a statement today. I think it was yesterday, probably. Probably that's one of the reasons why I think that there was a push to have the law changed for the reinvestment. Because when the law first, PPT and under ACES originally, if a person had a transferable tax credit certificate and they wanted to sell it to the state, they had to show that if they had a $10 million certificate, they had to show that within 24 months after they applied for that certificate, that they went out and spent $10 million worth of additional qualified capital expenditure in the state in order for the state to pay that to cash that out. And that requirement, that 24-month reinvestment requirement, I think became a kind of a problem for some companies.
Thank you.
Representative Newman.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. On the alternative tax credits for oil and gas exploration, you had mentioned that to get those credits that the explorers have to
hand over to the DNR specific well data. Is that well data sealed, or what happens to that data? Do other companies get to look at that data?
Representative Newman, through the chair. The well data is not sealed forever. There's a period after which some data becomes public, available to the public. And that was one of the changes in Section 4355.025. I don't remember the exact citation there, but some of the data does become public.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
So if they didn't share, if I didn't share with Representative Newman my drill information, chances are he'd want to come by me, wouldn't he? I mean, that means I must have a find here or something. I'd like to get within 3 miles of him or something and start drilling. That's the way I'd look at it. I mean, I watched, what was that? That one movie that guy built, Standard Oil, right? Something about gold. Anyway, everything there.
Yeah. All joking aside about why we don't remember why we did this stuff, in 2007, we were told, look, the remaining oil on the North Slope is more difficult to find, it's more expensive to find, and we were told that by stacking these credits together and then adding the deduction on top of that, well, that's what essentially become the biggest investor in capital exploration on the North Slope. We needed to in order to start developing an older region. So it's not like we sort of accidentally stacked these credits together. We were trying to come up with some very generous investment incentives to try and spur development in what had become a stagnant field. I mean, you know, people are talking about development or oil production going down this year. It's been going down since 1990.
Through the chair, Representative Guerra, I think we can certainly speak to a number of credits that have been applied for, dollars, things along those lines. The effectiveness would be something that you'd need to bring the producers up here, I believe, to talk to that point. We can show you a dollar and number of credits, but what does that mean? And we can tell half the story. We're going to need them to tell the other half, I believe.
Good luck. Good luck. It was pointed out they weren't here when we did this either.
That's right.
You know, kind of let the children go to the playground. So anyway, moving along. Right?
Mm-hmm.
We did the best we could without the help.
Next, the net operating loss carry forward credit is currently up 25%. Of a net operating loss, which again I define as when the lease expenditures exceed revenues, can be applied against tax liability in the following year, and not in the year, obviously in the year that the loss was generated, you wouldn't have had a tax liability. Again, the credit is based on adjusted lease expenditures, which include both operating and capital expenses. So this is the first and only credit that includes some non-capital activities in it. These credits may be converted to certificates and cashed or transferred again, and as with all credits, may be applied against the tax liability. In the transitional investment expenditure credits, this credit equals to 20% of qualifying capital expenditures that were incurred between March 31st, 2001 and April 1st, 2006. The credit, however, is limited during the year that it's being taken by a taxpayer to 10% of the capital expenditures that is actually incurred between March 31st, 2006, and January 1st, 2008. This credit was revised under ACES to cover only producers or explorers not having production prior to January 1st, 2008. These credits are not transferable, may not be carried forward beyond 2013. These same capital expenditures may not qualify for any exploration credits that would have been claimed for the same expenditures that were used for exploration credits during that 2001 to 2006 period.
Rebel Senator Guttenberg.
So we're looking at here the second, well, the not exceeding 10% of the capital expenditures incurred between March 31st, 06. So have we finished with the 06 audits, the North Slope production audits yet, or are we still behind on those? I'm trying to figure out, you know, we're setting up a time frame, you know, to understand what it was in one, from one year to the next, or what's going on. So we're looking at 06, and we were basing a lot of our tax policy on the results of what happened. Have we even finished that 06 North Slope production credit audit?
Representative Guttenberg, through the chair, we are substantially complete with the 2006 audit.
So in other words, we really don't understand what we did yet or what happened yet completely.
Not completely.
Okay, thank you. In 06.
Additional non-transferable tax credit under 4355.024A, referred to as the new area development credit. It's a credit of up to $6 million for companies producing from leases of properties that are outside of Cook Inlet and outside of the North Slope. Credit can only be applied against a tax liability. And this credit expires in 2016. However, if a taxpayer or producer who did not have any commercial production prior to April 1st, 2006 starts producing before May 1st, 2016, may it extend the use of this credit for 9 years. So this credit could expire in 2016, or if someone starts producing within this new area, may be able to use this credit up through the year 2025 at the latest. The next credit, 4355.024C, small producer credit. It's a credit depending upon the level of production for a producer or taxpayer, up to $12 million per year. If the company is producing 50,000 barrels per day or less, it could get the full $12 million, and it's prorated to zero at 100,000 barrels per day. The production is not restricted by region, so it takes into account statewide production. The credit can only be used against a tax liability. Again, this credit could be extended for 9 years if first commercial oil and gas production occurs before May 1st, 2016. This credit may not be...
Oh, good. Good to finish.
Yeah, this credit may not be transferred or carried forward or turned into a cash certificate.
Representative,
my question on the bottom line: why is this one? This is a kind of a S of a question. Why is that one different from the others, where almost everything else is transferred or carried forward or cashed out? Why not this one as well?
Because this credit, along with the credit before, the new area development credit, is not really based upon a level of capital expenditure or like most of the other credits are. This is just for the fact that you're producing less than 50,000 barrels per day.
Period.
Period. That's what it's about. And the other one in 024A, all it has to do with is the fact that you're in that region that's not Cook Inlet and it's not North Snow. You're in, say, the Nanana Basin.
Representative Guerra.
Lenny, this is the only credit of the one that we've gone through that I've always had a problem with, but maybe I don't understand it very well. Does this credit apply to fields that were already in production before the credit came into existence?
Yes, this credit really applies to a producer or a taxpayer. So if you're a taxpayer, even if you had production before April 1st, 2006, and you meet this requirement for the 50,000 barrel per day production, you can take this small producer credit. However, if you were producing before April 1st, 2006, you know, it's definitely going to expire in 2016. You won't be able to extend it for the additional 9 years. Only if you were not producing before April 1st, 2006, could you extend it if you got some commercial production
before? You're right about that. I'll put a question mark at the end of it, so it sounds like I'm asking a question.
Okay.
There's only two fields on the North Slope that produce less, more than 100,000 barrels a day, so it's not really a small field credit. It applies to virtually every field except for Kaparik and Prudhoe Bay. And it's applying to fields that were already in existence that people were already developing. I'm just wondering, I mean, I see a bang for the buck if it applied to new small fields, but your incentives are incentives when they're encouraging new development. They're not incentives when they're giving somebody money for stuff they're already doing. And there's an aspect of sort of slop there on this one, I think. Put a fake question mark at the end of that.
He's smiling.
No, Representative Gary, I mean, I hear you, feel your pain. No. You're right. But the thing that keeps this credit, I guess, from being such a big outflow of cash or impact on the state's budget is that, you know, you can only use it year by year, so it's like you can't bank the $12 million. If you can't use the entire $12 million, you can only use what you can use. So if you only have a $10,000 tax liability, that's the most you're going to get out of it. So from that standpoint, it's not like giving money away in excess of what they otherwise would have paid. One of the new credits that were enacted during the legislation in 2010, well lease expenditure credit. This is a credit, 40% of well lease expenditures incurred in the state south of 68 degrees north latitude. Must be for intangible drilling costs or GNG seismic exploration. This credit may be applied against tax liability or certificated and cashed or transferred to another taxpayer. Now, the thing to remember about this credit is that these well lease expenditures are expenditures which would otherwise, before this point, would otherwise be getting the 20% QCE credit prior to this law going to effect. So what this is actually doing is adding an additional 20% worth of credit for certain types of expenditures. Okay, and it's limited to intangible drilling costs, which, you know, in the drilling of a well, intangible drilling costs represent those costs of items that have no salvage value that are incurred during the drilling of the well. And these include, you know, like labor, engineering, the day work that's done by the drill crews, mud used in the well, fuel used in the well, cement used in the well. One kind of rule of thumb you can look at as far as well costs are concerned is at about 75 to 85% of the costs incurred in drilling the well is considered to be intangible. So an order of magnitude.
Representative Guttenberg.
Thank you. I remember we dealt with this and certainly talked a lot about it in committee. And it's my recollection that this was a new credit that nobody had applied lease expenditure credits to a well before. I mean, basically you're talking about the wellhead, the well house, the basement, you know, unfortunately, or maybe fortunately, I stood around those wellheads for many years doing work, so I've got a feel for what it is. Has this been used? I mean, is this your understanding that have you seen this used before, and has it been used by taxpayers yet? Do we know that?
Representative Guttenberg, to the chair. This is a relatively new credit, went into effect July 2010. So we have seen a few applications for claiming this type of credit this year. We will probably see more when, you know, the companies are required to do their year-end true-up filings with the department on March 31st, and probably that's when we'll see how much activity we would have had in this particular credit. Now, it's only existed, this credit only exists for south of the North Slope right now, so, but we should see what impact it has in when we get the filings and the required information that we get from the taxpayers at March 31st.
You know, in these credits and these expenditures, at least expenditures, you know, a lot of the things that we're trying to do here is create incentives for people to do more. And, you know, this is one that I was frustrated with because it's things that they're doing anyway, things you have to do, not by industry standards alone or whatever else. So I just look forward to seeing what the numbers look like. And, well, I know every taxpayer is going to take advantage of everything that they can. I mean, we know that. We all do that. So, thank you.
Okay. And lastly, we have the Cook Inlet Jackup Rig Credit under 4355025L. This is a credit, like I mentioned before, for the first three unaffiliated explorers using the same jackup rig in the Cook Inlet, penetrating the pre-tertiary zone. They're eligible for credits of up to $25 million each. The first well drill is eligible for a credit of $25 million. That's $25 million at 100%. The second well, 90% of the first $25 million. And the third well, 80% of the first $25 million. If a well that receives this credit is successful, 50% of the credit is to be repaid to the state over a 10-year period. And that's the only credit in which the state is going to recoup some of the credit if it's successful, of all the credits that we've.
Okay, Representative Newman.
I had a couple of questions, Mr. Chair. If I may just ask them, and then we don't have to make them faster. On this, where this comes into effect on March 31st, 2010, is there a deadline as between, you know, that date and another date when these wells have to be drilled?
Representative Newman, through the chair. I'm not aware of any deadline. There's not a deadline in the statute.
But this could be 50 years from now when this finally happens. And then it also talks about, if I may, Mr. Chair, about in person on these. that the same person can't drill a well and then get credit for well one, two, and three. And we've seen in other corporate structures where you'll have a, I'm going to say a mother corporation, but you have forms another corporation, A, B, C. Can A and C and B, B and C, which all are underneath this larger corporate umbrella, is there a way to protect the state so that you don't have that happening?
Representative Newman, through the chair, I certainly hope so.
I would say we're probably getting into Department of Law's territory, yeah. Not Department of Revenue. And I think as far as the deadline goes, it only applies for the first one to show up. So there's your deadline. The first one to show up gets it. The second one does not. So.
I was trying to read that into the statutes here, and I was trying to figure that out, Mr. Chair. And then if we have a well, a lot of times you'll have a well come down, and there'll be several wells. Is that considered separate wells if they're coming off of a lateral line off of a main well, or is it a well that's a horizontal well drilled down? Do we know that? Good questions.
Representative Newman, through the chair, I can only guess about that.
I just see, Mr. Chair, where there's a lot of open-end questions on this one here. We may want to look at it. Thank you.
Representative Fairclough.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. For clarity purposes, the 50% of the credit to be repaid over 10 years, is the $25 million, if it was the first person on the scene, is that part of a calculation at all? The $25 million incentive?
Yes. So it would be part of the calculation. If that particular well was the successful well that sustained commercial production, then the repayment to the state would be 50% of that $25 million if it's for the first well. Because the first well would have gotten 100% of the first $25 million as a credit. If it's the second well, it would be $22.5 million because that well would have gotten $22.5 million of the 20, you know, and so on. Now I'm going to talk a little bit about what we've seen in terms of credits that have been applied against production tax liability. Credits can be redeemed in two ways by taxpayers or explorers. They can either be applied against production tax liability, and some credits obviously can be converted into a transferable tax credit certificate. So all credits can be applied against liability. Only all credits other than the small producer credit, the new area development credit, the TIE credit cannot be converted into transferable tax credit certificates. On this slide, we have a table that kind of shows what's been the experience since the inception of PPT for how credits have been applied against tax liability. And when I'm talking applied against tax liability, this is a situation where the taxpayer, when it does its monthly installment or annual tax filing, as it submits its check for its tax liability to the state, it withholds the amount of the credit that is taken. So those dollars never flow into the state treasury. It's a deduction from the amount of the payment being made to the state. And this table also shows the type of credits that we have seen on some of the tax filings. If you will, most of the taxpayers who would be withholding liabilities are, you know, obviously the producers. And the biggest credit that they're claiming are the capital expenditure credits. And in the first couple of years of PPT and ACES, we see the transitional investment credits. And this is done, this table is done on a fiscal year basis. So like for 2006 was only the 3 months from April 1st through June 30, the 2007, the fiscal year for the state, as you all know, is between July 1st and June 30. So the 2007 amounts are what was withheld from payments during that period, July 1st through June 30 of 2008, and so on and so forth. 2011, we have an asterisk there because these numbers are estimated based on what we think the capital expenditures are going to be for the period ending June 30, 2011. So in summation, about $1.9 billion worth of credits have been withheld from payments to the state. And this is just kind of a graphical depiction of that activity. And as you can see, in 2006 was obviously for only a three-month period. 2007 seems to be a high number, and that was during a period in which 100% of the credits earned for a particular year could be taken on the tax return. And then at beginning July 1st, 2007, then only 50% could be withheld. So that's why the numbers started going back down, because half of the tax credits were being withheld. And then it kind of ramped back up due to probably more in line with capital expenditures occurring for these taxpayers.
Representative Guerra.
Thanks. I guess I do want to quibble a little bit. If you go back to the prior page, in 2007 and 2008 and 2006, we had a credit on the books that I'll just personally state I thought was inappropriate. It was the TIE credit. That was not a credit for investment you made that year. That was a credit that you got for investments you made in prior years under the old ELF system. And it was sort of a reward for saying thank you for your investments under the old ELF system. If you take those out of the equation, capital credits have gone up every year since 2008. I think maybe every year since 2007. The only reason the numbers are higher in 2007 and 2008 are because we still had some of those lingering thank you for investing under the ELF system credits. Is that a fair statement?
Representative Garrett, through the chair, that is fair.
Representative Guttenberg.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Looking at the exploration credits, and I obviously you don't go earlier than 2006. I just don't know, and I'm wondering what the percentage is of the expenditures that the amount is in those years, because we look at 2006 and 2007, and then to 8, you're escalating up, and then you're sliding back down. Just consider the estimate for 2011. I'm just trying to assess in my mind the amount of exploration that was done all the years. I mean, my first job on the slope in the early 70s was seismic out of Umiak. And I know there's been a lot of seismic work done all these years, and you know we do seismic because we want to do development and production. But I'm not sure what that represents, and I wouldn't mind getting a conversation with DNR about the amount of exploration that's happened and what those credits represent. I hope if we get to some point in the future, we can have that conversation with them. Thank you.
Next, we're going to talk a little bit about the transferable tax credit certificates. next three slides are going to be just a little bit about the process of the transfer of tax credit certificates and kind of what the department does in terms of getting those turned around. The first is on the 023A credits for the, for those explorers who apply for those certificates. This is just kind of a typical example of how it would, how the process would go. The top line represents the activity, when the activity is taking place by the explorer, that they're actually going out and incurring these expenditures. Under our regulations, taxpayers can apply for their certificates on a quarterly basis. So after they go out and spend, you know, capital dollars in the first quarter of the year, they can submit an application to the department to for the actual credits related to those expenditures. So the next four lines under the top line is like kind of our process of, you know, us getting the applications in and the time frame we have to get the credits out the door. Under the statutes, the department has 120 days after March 31st, following the year that the expenditures were incurred, to either grant or deny the tax credit. But we endeavor to get them out quicker than that. So if someone were to submit an application for a tax credit, say in March for the first quarter, we try to get those out within a much more reasonable time than waiting a year later for the taxpayer. And then once the, so at the latest for a particular year, we would try to get the application out the door at least by 1st of July. And then once the taxpayer get their cash, transferable tax credit certificate, they could turn around and apply for cash, which is that last line. So typically, from the time that an expenditure is made to the time that they can actually apply for the cash would run about an 18-month period.
Representative Guttenberg.
Thank you. And now with our special masters, has that line shrunk down? Our auditors, I mean, that's why we added them into the budget to have those positions. Have we been more efficient in doing those things by having more expertise in office? Give yourself credit, I guess, as well.
Well, Representative Guttenberg, through the chair, we become more efficient because we've kind of streamlined some of our processes. We do have additional auditors performing this task. We actually, within the department, formed a group to strictly deal with tax credit applications because early on, you know, after inception of PBT and ASIC, especially when oil prices were going through the roof, you know, companies were spending a lot of money and we were getting a lot of applications in. One of the things that we were doing first that we're not doing as much now is we're probably doing more audit work up front. But the statutes allow us to go back at any time and audit the application, even after the taxpayer has gotten the certificate and actually converted it to cash. We still have audit rights. So what we do now is a kind of a due diligence review when they submit the application. We request information to kind of give us a, you know, to do a real good review of the type of expenditures they're requesting the credits for. And then the formal audit process can come later. So we've been able to streamline the process and get the credits out a little bit quicker.
Follow up.
So earlier I asked about the 06 audits being done. And now I'm hearing that you have a faster process. Maybe you have pre-audit work done, or audits going to be done faster in the future for looking backwards, or because you've done more work, or trying to...
Well, okay, so you... A tax credit application you have to separate that from a tax filing. A tax filing is for those producers who have paid a tax liability, done the true-up, and then we have 6 years from that particular point in order to audit those. Those are the those tax filings are where we've only gone through 2006. Okay. But for the tax credit applications, these are for explorers who don't have a tax liability. They're, you know, asking for the cash from the state. So we're processing those quicker to get the credits out the door because we don't want to disincentivize the program by holding up getting the credits to the taxpayer. But we also do have that right to go back and audit them, you know. So our due, we think in most of the cases, our due diligence review is a good enough review to assure us that, you know, we looked at the expenditures enough. But we do have a right to go back and complete audits. And so we have, like I said, like I mentioned, we have separate group of auditors dealing with tax credits as opposed to a group of auditors that deal with tax filings.
Representative Newman and Gara.
Mr. Chair, you were just talking about a look-back period. Is there a time limit on your available or that's applicable on the look-back for your formal audits?
Yes, there is. Representative Newman, through the chair, right now the assessment period for an audit for a tax filing is 6 years after the audit, the, you know, the final return was filed. And The true-ups, you know, the taxpayers, the tax is calculated on the calendar year. Taxpayers do their monthly installments. And then in by March 31st of the following year, they do a true-up for that previous calendar year. So March 31st of this year, we will get the true-up calculation for all of the taxpayers that owe a liability or requesting a refund for 2010. From that date, March 31st, 2011, we have until March 31st, 2017 to assess those particular tax filings.
Follow up.
During that true up, if there's found that there's unpaid taxes due to the state, what's the interest rate?
Okay, during the true up and for a particular for the installment payments, we use the federal short-term rates, monthly rates, to calculate the interest that's either due or due from or due to the taxpayers. Now, after March 31st, if we do the audit, say 2 years from now, and we do an assessment, and they owe us additional taxes or we owe them a refund, that interest rate is set out by statute at 11% currently. It's the higher of the federal district reserve rate or 11%.
11%?
Yes.
Done.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Representative Jura.
You know, one of the most difficult things for myself and a couple of the other members of the legislature to vote for this law years ago was that we wanted a gross tax, a tax that just taxed a percentage of the value of oil, right? Less auditing, more verifiable. And then once we went to a profits tax, which was a tough sell for a lot of us, but I came along, we were told, well, don't worry about it. I'm just, you know, profits are hard to calculate. People are going to put in a lot of expenses in there. We're going to audit them to make sure that those are real expenses and not exaggerated expenses. But we were told there would be enough auditors. And what I hear sometimes is that we don't have close to enough auditors to make sure that the tax returns we're getting back are accurate payments of the taxes that are owed. And so I guess, A, what's the department's opinion on whether you have enough auditors right now? And B, if you don't, what is it that we can do to get you enough auditors? Because I was a shaky vote on this bill years ago, and I came along with the promises that, look, there are two kinds of taxpayers. There are those who pay as little tax as legally possible, and that's the American way. You pay what's legally
required and as little as you can. And there are those who cross the line. Do we have enough auditors to catch those who are crossing the line?
Through the chair, Representative Guerra, we did bring on the audit master positions, which are a huge help, bringing folks like Lenny into the fold. 2006 was the first audit that included the net tax. We are through that, and it was a huge learning curve. We were busy, but I believe that with that experience behind us that we are right-sized staff-wise. We have not requested any new auditors in the 2012 budget. So I believe having that first year audit behind us that with that huge learning curve that we are comfortable with the staffing levels that we have currently.
Representative Costello.
Sort of as a follow-up to Representative Guerra's question, so when the state does the audits, what is the result of that? I mean, how often do we find errors, and in whose, you know, side are they on?
Representative Costello through the chair. It goes both ways. I mean, I don't think I could be specific with what we found, but
confidentiality issues are probably starting to come into the questions like that.
Yeah, but you know, they're still. I mean, with the law being as new as it was in 2006, and with you know, regulations still being drafted. There are areas of where there's a disagreement of interpretation of the statute. So,
I believe that's through the chair, Representative Costello. That's probably where, when we say it's substantially complete, there will be areas that will be. What's the word I'm looking for? Contested.
Yeah.
And it will go through the process to figure out where it should fall, and then we have the interest rate provision in statute to make either the state whole or the taxpayer whole.
Moving along.
Next slide, again, is just kind of a representative timeline for processing of a net operating loss claim on 023B. Again, the loss can only be determined at the end of the calendar year. And then the taxpayer would submit an application, and we would process it and turn it around to the taxpayer. And then the representative timeline for an 025 claim, or 025 claim where it's an exploration well or either some seismic activity is conducted during a particular drilling season. Under 025, the taxpayer producer has 6 months. Within 6 months after completion of the project to file for the 025. Once we get that particular application, we perform, in this situation, we perform a full audit of the expenditure of the project before we actually issue the tax certificate. However, if a taxpayer has a tax liability and they are submitting an 025 claim, they are allowed to go ahead and offset that potential 025, prospective 025 claim against their tax liability. With the, you know, of course, if there's any adjustments in that particular eventual amount of the credit through audit, then the state will assess any difference to the taxpayer.
transferable tax credit certificates generally any taxpayer can apply for a transferable tax credit certificate. Generally, it's only those taxpayers without tax liability to actually do. Because if you got a tax liability, you may as well apply the amount against your tax liability instead of going through the process of doing the certificate. Initially, under ACES, tax certificates are split and applied over 2 years. So when we get in a claim for either an 023A or B certificate, once we determine what that the amount of the claim granted, we will split that into two certificates, one in which the taxpayer can use immediately to turn into cash or apply against their tax liability, and the second certificate would have to be used the following year. Now, again, this changed as of July 1st, 2010, where credits for activities incurred south of the North Slope now could be issued, and the certificate will be issued for the full amount of the credit, one certificate instead of two. Now, the next slide shows, gives a little bit of activity that we've seen since the inception of these credits in terms of what has been claimed by the explorers, by type of credits. For instance, for the capital expenditure credits, we have had $510 million worth of tax credit claimed on those type of expenditures. Net operating loss credits, we've had $479 million. The well lease expenditure credit, which is a fairly new credit, it's been about $5 million claim, and that's just been during fiscal year 2011, because those credits came into existence as of July 1st. And then the exploration credits have been claimed. There's been $290 million for the exploration credits claimed throughout the years.
Mr. Chair.
Representative,
when you say pre-2007, is that everything pre-2007 or just
what? Yes. Representative Gutenberg, through the chair, that is everything pre-2007. And as you recall, and this is on a fiscal year basis, as you recall, the 025 credits came into existence in 2003. So we did have, between 2003 and at the onset of PPT, we did have a few of those types of tax credits applications that were processed.
Representative Wilson.
Would there be any way to take these tax credits and kind of go backwards and see what the state gained because of specific tax credits as they drilled for the first time, say, in 2005 and approximately what we've got now that's 2011, see which ones really are working, and we're getting investment without breaking any of the confidentiality rules.
Through the chair, Representative Wilson, I think that would be a almost impossible task to try and tie barrels produced to a certain tax credit. There would be some confidentiality issues, I believe. We'll look into it certainly and see what we could glean out of that information. But just first blush, I believe that would be a very tough number to tie together.
Follow up, sir?
Follow up.
It's just, I mean, I'm kind of amazed I'm actually catching on to what you're talking about. But at the same time, because, you know, all the numbers are together with all the companies, I'm just, you know, for me trying to figure out when we're looking at incentivizing companies, how do we pull some of these apart to say, well, this one really is working, and maybe use other fields and other examples from other states. Maybe it doesn't come from our example. So, you know, I don't want to put you to a lot of work, but it would be a lot easier to be able to understand which ones in the future might be worth looking into.
Through the chair, Representative Wilson, I understand what you're trying to get at. I believe when you're looking at the decline curve, you'd be trying to assume had these credits not being were in place, what would the decline curve have had looked like? So that's where it gets tough trying to tie that back down to that level of barrels produced, et cetera.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Representative Newman and Jira.
Thank you. Are these a fiscal year or calendar years that we're looking at here? A fiscal year. And then I was trying to relate, if I may, Mr. Chair. Trying to relate what Representative Wilson was trying to get to, a reduction or put an investment in there, you know, investment into Alaska and the capital expenditures. What story is this telling?
Through the chair, Representative Newman. From the Department of Revenue's perspective, we can look at the tax credit system in place and see tax credits are being applied for, they are being used, activity is taking place. That's half the story. I believe Department of Natural Resources could button the story up nicely by showing production exploration that's taking place, et cetera. We can only show how much of the credit system in place is being used and to what degree. The results of that credit system are something that we would not be able to speak to.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you. On the net operating loss credit, I mean, we want people to go out there and start investing and looking at wells to find out whether they're producible, right? So there's going to be a net operating loss. And can you tell us in that $500 million that we spent on net operating loss credits, can you tell us if any of those have then ultimately become producing wells? Can you tell us, is that just Exxon spending money at Point Thompson because they have to and there's no production? Is it Ugarok and Nikaichuk, which recently came online, which started out as operating loss wells and now are making money? Do we know any of that?
Through the chair, Representative Guerra, we can look into that for you, certainly, and see what information we have available and what is confidential and what we can provide to you.
So
we'll certainly look into that.
Thank you.
I have a question in regards to the credits. If exploration's not happening, evidently that's not the incentive they're looking for. So if you eliminate tax credits and give them a tax break, I guess on royalties is what they're looking for, people looking for to get out there and drop more wells in there. It may make it a little more simple as far as audits, just let them go and tax the gross and we'd probably put a bunch of auditors out of work or something, but, you know, one doesn't realize how complicated it is, it gets, you know, as you go through this. Well, oil prices have been going back up, so I guess that's why it's an issue here lately. I mean, a few years ago it wasn't. So, you know, what is our biggest incentive then, would you say? I mean, maybe we can talk about when we get into the oil tax bill, because I haven't even read the thing. I looked at it, listened to any of the discussions on it yet. So maybe we'll adjust it later.
Chairman Thomas, I believe that would probably be a good idea. We're only looking at the tax credit side of the equation. We're not talking about oil price and the tax system itself. So those obviously have huge parts in the equation, and this, you know, how big of a part this has in it is not something we can make a call on. That would be something the producers would have to speak to. But you're absolutely right. The price of oil and the tax system in place also drives the decision.
You know, a lot of people talk to me just to fix it. As well, fix what? You know, we're looking at this is eliminate the complication. So, like I said, we haven't seen the bill yet, or at least, you know, listen to it, but people are already banging on the doors to fix it. Well, fix what, you know? This is, you know, help. So anyway, I didn't mean to open a whole bag of worms here. I represent Guerra.
Sure. I'm more cynical. before the governor introduced his current tax proposal, the statement out of the Department of Revenue was that capital credit applications were going up, that investment was going up on the North Slope, and that the system was working. That was in, like, December in a Juneau Empire article. Then the governor's proposal comes out to roll back taxes by $1.2 billion. The argument is the current system is not working, and now the department's position is we can't tell if it's working. I think I recall getting two different positions from the department, the pre-January one and the one right now, which is we can't tell. And I know a lot of that directive comes from above, but I feel like I'm being given two different answers based on what people want to happen.
Through the chair, Representative Guerra, again, we're looking at the tax credit side of the equation only. I don't believe either one of us have said it's not working. The system itself is working. We're putting a lot of different credits on the table available to producers and explorers. They're certainly taking advantage of them. As you can see from some of the graphs that we've shown, capital investment is up. What that capital investment is a different story. Is it exploring? Is it capital investment in existing fields, et cetera? We can't address that part of the equation right now. You're correct when it comes to the governor's bill, which I won't speak to any details at this point, but the tax credits are part of that, the tax rates part of that, and the price of oil is always going to be a huge part of the equation. So the tax credit system itself is working. Our auditors are doing a great job to implement it, get regulations in place. So for that small part of the puzzle, it has been a success for our department as far as how we implemented it and how it's going forward.
Representative Costello, then Guttenberg.
Mr. Chair, ask and answer. Thank you.
Okay. Representative Guttenberg.
Thank you. To continue on the line of questioning that Representative Guerra had, you're saying that the credits and incentives and everything is working. And my question is, what is the value of that? I mean, I would say we had to go back to DNR to understand some of those equations, but you're also on that other side, which you do revenue projections. I mean, we didn't put this into place just to give them back money. We did them put these into place because we wanted to change their behavior by giving them credits for capital, for lease oil expenditures, for exploration. So that's what we're, in many ways, that's what we're asking. What have we changed? We want to see production go up. And, you know, and so looking at the credits having working, you're saying they're working. If working means that they're applying for them and they're eligible for them and they're receiving them, well, that's true. But are they working as far as we're going to get production in 5 years out from a credit or an exploration credit or a lease it? Because we've done these things to change their behavior by giving them incentives, and you are on the other side of that equation, which does the revenue forecast. So where is the revenue forecast showing the productions that these are working on the other end? And I think that's kind of the policies we have to make around this table. You know, those worked because they're doing things and applying for them. It's translating into what production is really what we want, production and jobs and, you know, increased infrastructure and those things. So that's kind of the question I think we're going to be getting at certainly later in the session. But right now, kind of looking at the same thing, saying, you're saying it works. We're saying, you know, and the administration's saying it doesn't work, we need to change things. So we're kind of in a mishmash of explanations of things. But where is the production coming out of all of these credits?
Through the chair, Representative Guttenberg, when I say it's working, I'm saying internally in our department, the way the system has been put in place, it's working. What the results of that are, we're not prepared to speak to you at this meeting. This was just to be a 101 on the tax credit system. We will speak to that issue, certainly. when the governor's bill is presented. And we'll be more than happy to address those in detail for you. But for this hearing, we'd like to stick with
that. I understand that. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Okay. Just a comment that will go ahead. I just keep noticing on your page that tax credits keep going up each year, so somebody's using them anyway. And I don't know if they're drilling or if they use that to put paint on what, but somebody's using something out there. And having watched our budget fluctuate around, you're at estimated, what, 450, four and some million tax credit this year. I got a bet out with somebody somewhere. I bet you'd be closer to $600 million before we're done with guessing. You know, I mean, we've never been accurate on any of our guesses, so who knows. So, anyway, it's just a comment. But I just see the numbers keep going up, so somebody's doing something out there.
And Chairman Thomas, we rely on the industry to provide us information about what their plan is for the next year. So the estimates on these credits are based heavily on what we're hearing from the industry.
Right. But they are in the budget, so we may see. I was saying maybe we'll see an amendment to it. So, okay. We didn't beat the Senate time. We still got 15 minutes. So.
The last one thing I just want to iterate on this particular slide is that this information is for applications received through January 4th, 2011. So we expect to receive more applications shortly. And this slide is just a graphical depiction of the previous table. Now this slide shows transferable tax credit certificate activity by fiscal year in millions of dollars, and it shows the dollar value that we issued each fiscal year, how much were refunded out of the state treasury, and how much were either transferred or applied to taxes. And gives kind of a running balance of the outstanding tax credit certificates at a particular place and time. As you can see, as of, again, this is activity through February 4th. As of February 4th, we had about $73.4 million worth of tax credit certificates that were outstanding, available to be submitted for cash. Payment by taxpayers.
Just a question. I think everything we've seen here has been a fiscal year basis. Is that consistent through everything that industry is doing as well and other departments? And it seems like it's easy to run into a conflict between a fiscal year and a calendar year. Thank you.
Representative Goodenberg, through the chair, you know, when it comes to issues that impact the state budget, either directly or indirectly, you're right. Most taxpayers operate on the calendar year. Even our tax is assessed on a calendar year basis. However, the state's business is done on a fiscal year. So we try to convert calendar year information into fiscal year for that purpose. For instance, that refunded amount line you see there will tie to what was actually paid during those fiscal years. And you can see the amounts going up, and I think there's a good reason for that, and part of it has to do with the fact that, you know, early on when especially when the explorers were getting the tax credit certificates and they then have the liabilities to apply them against, or they didn't have the additional reinvestment to apply for cash from the state. They were just holding on to them, and then the secondary market for these certificates kind of dried up on them because nobody were willing to buy these certificates, or they were buying them at deep discounts. So when the law changed last year, that said, okay, you no longer have to have that 24-month reinvestment period, you know, we had quite a bit of activity within our department of all of a sudden processing these claims for cash refunds of these credit certificates. So the $299 million you see in fiscal year 2011 is just for the period from July 1st of 2010 through, like I said, this date, February 4th. Now, that's more than what we did all of 2010. And the projection is for with the credit certificates we think that are going to be issued between now and the fiscal year, end of the fiscal year, and then the ones that are outstanding, you'll see on the future slide, the projection is for the number to be $430 million by the end of the fiscal year. And that's the number you say is probably going to be $600 million. But that's why we show it on the fiscal year, because I think people can relate that to what they see on, you know, state financial statements and stuff like that. Okay. Last part of the presentation is just going to talk about the cash refunds process and history. Cash refunds for tax credit certificates are governed by 4355028. And kind of the requirements to be for a taxpayer explorer to get cash from the state for a tax credit certificate, I think the major one was repealed in 2010 that says that they must show within 24 months, subsequent QCE or lease biz equal to the cash salt. That went away July 1st, hence we had a run on the state's cash. The taxpayer must have a zero tax owed in current and past years or have no delinquent taxes due and must not have more than 50,000 barrels a day of production. It's kind of a rundown of what we saw in the previous slide of refunds by fiscal year. First fiscal year after PPT went into effect, 2007, $54 million was paid out, $54 million in 2008, and since then it's been ramping up. This slide is give you an overview of where we stand in the oil and gas tax credit fund. There's been $904 million appropriated. $851 million has been paid out of the fund. Interest earned in the fund was $22 million, and the balance was
$75 million available. We probably need some more appropriation before the end of the fiscal year.
What happens if we're operating in the red and we don't have it?
What happens? Well, under the statute, would you like to?
Sure.
Okay.
Well, when you threw the statute word out there,
I was going to say that under the statute, it said that the state would refund these as the money appropriations are available. So. You know, it's kind of a policy call as to whether you're going to say, hey, we're not going to pay any tax. I mean, what kind of message would that be sending to people who are out?
Like our bonds, I get it. Yeah.
This slide is kind of an illustration of when you combine the credits that have been withheld from, you know, the taxpayers that are paying the taxes, and the cash that's been going out of the state coffers for the transferable tax credit certificates. This kind of gives you the total picture of what the, if you consider it a stimulus, has been since the inception of PPT on a, this again, on a fiscal year basis. And the last slide is a kind of a picture of how capital expenditures have been trending year by year since 2006.
Question?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'm not the best guy in the room at numbers, so any point I've gone wrong here, let me know. But I think what these two slides tell me is to pick 2011, because they're about even numbers here, that the industry has spent $2.7 billion for capital expenditures in the oil patch, and that they've gotten back from the state about $900 million, which would make that would mean that the people of the state of Alaska are paying about a third of these costs, and the oil industry's paying about two-thirds of that. Am I reading that correctly?
Well, if I may go back to the previous slide. It's tough. The answer to that is tough to say, because when you're looking at the amount of payments the state is making for the transferable or refunding for the transferable tax credit certificates, the expenditures that gave rise to those particular certificates or those credits that we're paying occurred in earlier periods. It's just, the payment for those credits are catching up because of the fact that now, those particular taxpayers do not have to hold on to those certificates anymore. They probably held on to them for a couple of years because they either couldn't get anyone to buy them from them, or they couldn't. They had no tax liability to apply them against. So you can't really, do a comparison between that $900 million and the $2.7 for that particular year, and say that the state is, those credits that the state is paying that year, strictly related to the capital expenditures that are being incurred that same year. So there's a little bit of a lag.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Thank you. I'm at least smart enough to understand that. But if you're just netting it out based on the numbers that you've got in front of you, that seems to be what's going on. Whether that's if it's actually a dollar that was spent 2 years ago or whenever, it's still going to be, you're going to get something, at least projected yet, something like those numbers. Is that correct?
Yes, Representative Dugan, through the chair, but I think that's a fair assessment.
Okay, thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Representative Newman.
Mr. Chair, on these tax credits when they're being created or sold from one company to another, what's the, I think we were looking at 88 to 92 cents when we created these. What's it? Do you know the average price or what they've been able to get for them? Because you've mentioned quite a few times the ability to sell or to trade these has gone down.
Representative Newman, through the chair, because I don't know what the average price is, because that's a kind of a transaction between two private companies. I mean, what they sell them to each other for, the state doesn't get involved in that transaction. Now, the thing to remember, though, is that we honor the certificate at its full value.
100%.
100%. So if the certificate was issued for $100 and Company A sold to the Company B for $90, Company B can come to the state and apply it. Now, and that, when they buy it from another company, they can only apply it against the tax liability, but they can't apply it for the full amount of the certificate.
But as a follow-up, the change in the law where they do not have to hold it for 24 months and reinvest a like amount is no longer in place. So they can turn those in for cash immediately or as soon as the statute requires. So there, I think it's more of what was the market.
Yes.
I don't see a market right now because they can turn those in for cash themselves.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you. Thank both of you for being here and indulging us and being patient. This for the business finance. We're not meeting tomorrow. We're meeting Monday at 1:30, and we're going to do the HB 107 capital budget. Be an overview with Karen Rehfeldt of OMB, and that's going to be it. We're adjourned.